Today, people-based QE is the name of the game. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. In a desperate attempt to keep the GDP positive, Australia has been upping the intake of people into the country, especially since the COVID years. Actually, Australia's net migration hit a record 530,000 in the years 22-23, but since then net migration has fallen to 430,000 in the year 23-24, and then 305,000 in the year 24-25. Treasury currently forecasts a further decline to 260,000 in the 25-26 year and 225,000 in the year 26-27, although there are suggestions it will be higher. Now, we also know that the number of temporary visa holders in Australia hit an all-time record high of 3 million 3 months before our usual peak in March. If you add the 1.8 million people on permanent visas, you'll get to 4.8 million visa holders in the country right now, along with the 1.7 million citizenships granted by conferral in the last 10 years. Now, it's worth noting here that under changes made by the Albanese government, New Zealand citizens no longer need to secure permanent residence before becoming Australian citizens from 2023-24. As a result, those places are now taken by other nationalities, effectively increasing the size of the migration program, with New Zealand citizens Australian citizenship directly. Around 3,000 specific engagement visas are also excluded from the permanent migration intake, despite being permanent resident visas. An article in the SMH explained how since the Albanese government eased citizenship requirements in July 2023, applications from New Zealand have surged 462%, with 92,000 New Zealand special category visa, the SCV holders, applying between the middle of 2023 and the middle of 2025. Now, the article notes that 48% of the 92,000 applicants were born in third world countries, not New Zealand. Those individuals first migrated to New Zealand, gained residency or citizenship there, and then used the New Zealand SCV pathway to move to Australia. More than 400 people per week are becoming eligible for Australian citizenship through relaxed rules for New Zealanders, many of whom were not born in New Zealand. All of this has intensified concerns that New Zealand is becoming a migration stepping stone, given New Zealand has eased its immigration rules and will grant residency in just 18 months for some workers. Now, I've reported before Adam Crichton's observation from the IPA that Australia net overseas migration clocked 305,000 for the financial year 25, the third highest on record, and almost entirely from developing nations. GDP per capita might have shrunk in 10 of the last 13 quarters, but at least, he says, diversity is our strength. But more people require more housing, infrastructure like hospitals, roads, water, and power. And we're failing badly to meet this increased demand, which also drives inflation and overall costs of living. Housing construction and rents are the two largest items in the CPI, and both contributed to the second half rise in inflation. Both are driven in part by population growth. The government policy that is contributing to high inflation is fast migration-led population growth. This chart from Justin Fabo at Antipodean Macro shows there is a strong correlation between rents and the strength in population growth or immigration relative to units and apartment completions. Treasury, of course, would celebrate more people to tax. And people growth means jobs growth. And data has shown so far Australia is managing to keep unemployment low, even if income growth overall is pretty feeble. All of this is contentious because it's easy to slip into an Australian first way of thinking and even be accused of racism. But there are, of course, policy choices, and they have their consequences. Now, I wanted to revisit this today because the ABS released their latest overseas arrivals and departures data to December 2025. In December 2025, the ABS said short-term visitor arrivals were 1.036 million, an increase of 9.7% on 1 year earlier. Short-term resident returns were 867,000, an increase of 5.6% on 1 year earlier. And total arrivals were up 7.7% at 1.99 million on 1 year earlier. And total departures were at 2.45 million, an increase of 8.4% on 1 year earlier. New Zealand was the largest source country, accounting for 13.7% of all visitor arrivals, followed by the UK and the USA and then China. The highest number of visitor arrivals for short-term trips was observed in New South Wales at 389,000, and the Northern Territory recorded fewest at just over 2,900. Within the series, so-called long-term visitor arrivals rose 12.1% compared with a year ago to 54,700, while the mirror departures rose 4.8% to 57,560. And it's worth noting that there were 22,740 long-term residents returning to Australia, up 4.8% from a year ago, compared with 25,030 long-term resident departures, down 3% from December 2024. Now, the ABS is rightly at pains to point out that these statistics report on the number of international border crossings rather than the number of people. Most data in this release are rounded to the nearest 10, they also said. As a result, sums of components may not add exactly to the totals. And this release, they say, presents statistics on all overseas arrivals and departures, which is not the same as overseas migration statistics. Overseas arrivals and departure data, the OAD data, includes permanent and long-term movements, and that should not be used as a measure of overseas migration. This data does not reflect the official ABS definition of migration and may lead to inaccurate interpretations. For example, OAD permanent and long-term arrivals may be increasing, while actual overseas migrant arrivals are decreasing for the same period. Now, as I've highlighted before, there are government publications which suggest that the overseas arrivals and departures are not actually a bad proxy for the later net overseas migration reports, which adjust the earlier series. Others suggested that when it comes to demand for, say, rental property, actually visitors could be a better proxy for future rental growth, as they still need somewhere to live. So the whole story is, well, a bit muddy. But late last year, the ANU, the Australian National University, published research and a media release titled "Incorrect Reporting of ABS Data Fueling False Claims Australia as a Mass Migration Problem." And they said widely circulated claims of out-of-control mass immigration in Australia are false and misleading and stem from the incorrect reporting of tourism and travel data. There's nothing to do with migration, according to a major new report from the Australian National University. And note that has nothing to do with migration, which is a bit, I think, over the top. The report's authors say that public commentators, activists, and some media outlets are incorrectly using permanent and long-term, the PLT, movement data, which is collected by the ABS, to claim Australia has a migration problem, and that distorts public understanding. This is despite repeated clear comments from the ABS that PLT does not measure migration, but instead records people coming in and out of Australia and includes tourists, temporary visa holders, returning residents, and repeated short absences. ANU Professor Anand Gamlin explains that net overseas migration, the NOM, the number of migrants arriving in Australia minus number of migrants departing Australia, is in fact falling sharply and has been falling since June 2023. And he said the misuse of PLT data is generating sensational news headlines that are fueling misinformation and peddling false narratives, while also undermining public policy on migration. Researchers who ignore these warnings from the ABS are likely committing research misconduct, a serious offence at any research institution. Under volatile conditions like the country's border reopening post-COVID-19, the errors in PLT-based claims explode, producing charts and headlines that are factually wrong. And according to their researchers, in recent years, PLT arrivals have been 23 to 30% higher than actual migrant arrivals, and PLT departures have been between 115 and 135% higher than actual migrant departures. And the co-author, Emeritus Professor Peter McDonald, said the consequences of the misuse of PLT data extends beyond public discourse. Net overseas migration is the figure used to update Australia's estimated resident population, the ERP, the number that governments use for funding, infrastructure planning and representation, he said. This makes net overseas migration the benchmark for accurate migration figures to influence issues such as housing, infrastructure, labour planning, population change, budget and more. Using PLT instead of MOM risks poor policy decisions and misallocation of resources. NOM is the standard used globally and is Australia's official measurement of migration that is built into the country's legal and institutional frameworks. People often confuse NOM with permanent migration, but it's bigger than that. It also includes flows the government can't cap, like people departing and Australians returning home. Now, universities, of course, benefit from more foreign students. Indeed, their business model requires it, especially following government policy funding cuts of recent years. So are they protesting too much? Well, maybe. But to sum up, however you read the numbers, there is a clear QE people policy in play compared with the recent past. And despite all the quarrelling about what the numbers really say, the truth is the settings currently are eroding standards of living and making housing more expensive and stoking inflation. It's really that simple. Now, if only we had a really effective political opposition party who was willing to probe the truth. But no, they're squabbling like rats in a sack while more people pour in. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.